Brilliant. Thank you very much, everyone. So my talk is called Our Family's Electrotech Journey, How We Went All Electric and How You Can Too. So I'm James. I work in Electrotech, as it's now known, because energy is all electric, as I will now cover. I'm an engineer working clean energy generation, but the opinions here are my own, not representing my employer anyway. But I should say, we don't get any like special perks or anything, so all of this is applicable to anyone, really. I also help run a local makerspace and volunteer at a repair cafe, so those are my interests. Could tie this in with a space theme of EMF. Most of our energy comes from space, mostly from the sun, although some of it is geothermal or tidal or nuclear. But this is also a spaceship, right? And this was taken, this picture, on a recent moon mission. And it's what I find fascinating is just how thin the atmosphere is. You can see it. It's just a tiny sort of, a few pixels around the edge of the planet. Here's another one. You get a bit further away from the far side of the moon. It suddenly starts to look pretty small. This was taken by people on a recent mission, probably the furthest people have been. If you go a bit further, obviously not people, no guesses for whether one on the left is taken. But this, that's Earth, that tiny little spot there. And then on the right, so the left one's Cassini probe, right one's from Voyager, the pale blue dot, taken out beyond Neptune. And Earth is that tiny thing right there. So what is this talk all about? What is Electrotech? It's mainly low-carbon technology, electric vehicles and charge points for those, for electrifying travel, solar PV, photovoltaic panels, and home batteries for storing and generating, and shifting that to when you need to use it. About heat pumps for making electric heating affordable and efficient because they produce a lot more heat than you put in energy, and induction cooking because that's a lot more efficient than cooking on gas. So this is all about efficiency. It's about using less energy. So although we're switching things to electricity, we actually use less energy compared to what you would be burning. So what was our mission? We moved into a house that's about 100 years old, very typical house, semi-detached, 1930s sort of building. Not very efficient, not very well insulated, and we wanted to do it up with a sustainability mission in mind, add a load of insulation, put a load of Electrotech in, get the gas disconnected, and save a load of money. And we also wanted to monitor all this so we could see how it was going, automate it and control it, and sort of measure what the improvements were, such as like air quality improvements as well. And this is all sort of done with Open Energy Monitor and Home Assistant. I'll cover that a bit later. So why give this talk? It's not to brag or be smug about anything. It's really just to try and normalize this and encourage people to get on board and do this. And not everyone's an early adopter. I'm sure a lot of people at this festival are. But it's just to try and get people to do this and make it like the normal thing to do. So sharing some lessons. Obviously, if you're an early adopter, there are some niggles with things. And also just sort of busting these doubts. There's a lot of doubts being sort of bandied about. But a lot of it is just hypothetical. People talk about them as don't heat pumps cost more to run? It's like, well, my experience is very different. And is that your personal experience or you just read that? Spoiler alert, it's all very positive. It's going to be greener, healthier, safer, spend less money, and it's a lot of fun if you like geeking out and stuff like this, like I do. So here's what we did. Got electric cars, charge points, smart meters we're covering, solar PV and home batteries, heat pumps in various sizes, insulation, and getting the gas removed, capped off, and an induction hob for cooking. So let's dig into this into a bit more detail. First of all, we're going to talk about travel. So this actually starts before we got this new house. We bought our first electric vehicle, secondhand Nissan Leaf, about 6 years ago. And that really helped us decide what we wanted when we were moving house. It's like we definitely wanted off-street parking so we could park it and charge it from the house. Like if we didn't have off-street parking, it's pretty painful. So then we got a secondhand charge point and a secondhand RCD, get that installed when we moved in. And then about 4 years ago, we got a second EV, a much newer one with a longer range through a salary sacrifice scheme. That lease expired, but we replaced it with essentially the same vehicle, which had been sent back by someone else. Got a smarter charge point, which has a lead, which is way more convenient than getting a cable out and plugging it into a socket. It's also smarter, so it can schedule when things are charged a lot easier. But I'm just saying, this is not an excuse for not doing active travel. Like, we still walk to a lot of places. We walk into town, we walk to school, and I live up a big hill, so it keeps me really fit. Yeah, EVs don't solve the problems with traffic. So we've done probably about 70,000 electric miles, so yeah, a fair bit. We have a bit of experience in that. Public charging is probably about 5,900 kilowatt hours. It's probably nearer 6 megawatt hours because not everything is in this app. Some is paid with contactless or other things. So that probably equates to about a ton and a half of CO2 compared to driving a petrol or diesel vehicle. It's about 20,000 miles of public charging. So the remainder of that, about 50,000 miles, is just home charging, which probably equates with the same formula to about 4 tons of CO2 saved compared to an ICE vehicle, internal combustion engine. So in total, about 5.5 tons over the years. Compared to driving more traditional vehicles. But this is like all an average. And if you're driving in places that have very green electricity because they have a lot of nuclear or other things, then it's actually a lot lower. And it turns out we have done that. So if you're replacing a vehicle, those were the savings. But if you're replacing flying, as we've been doing, the multiples are a lot higher. Firstly, because they measure it per person. So it's roughly the same flying to an ICE vehicle, only per person, but obviously usually have a lot more people in a car than just one. But flying has non-carbon impacts as well. There's lots of non-CO2 forcing, which is the dominant factor, in fact, things like contrails. So it's going to be roughly 9 times better doing an EV than flying somewhere. So we've done a lot of trips up Scandinavia and down to France as well, where very green electricity there as well. And it saves a lot of flying. And it's just much nicer way of traveling. You can take more stuff with you. It's more relaxing. You see things that you miss when you're flying over. So more things about the house. First of all, had to get some smart meters. These really unlock the time of use tariffs and the cheap electricity. There are some concerns about them. A lot of those can be alleviated with like home batteries. But really, they're essential if you want to do this cheap. We had a lot of insulation, put cavity wall insulation in, put a lot of loft insulation in. Just to keep the house a lot warmer, that works really well. Our house did look like it had been shot up with like bullet holes for a while until we had it repainted, because they drill in from the outside and then blow these sort of balls in. And then just over a year ago, had our gas meter removed and capped off. You will get an inspection from a local gas network about a year later, but they came along and they said it's all new plastic piping, couldn't smell any gas, so nothing needed, not be able to dig anything up, so that's not a worry at all. Generation and storage. So we got solar panels fitted about 5 years ago now. We've got 10 panels on an east-west split. So not the most efficient system. We've got a home battery. It's a low voltage DC, lithium iron phosphate battery. So it's not as unstable as some of the ones that have cobalt chemistries using cars. And it's about 7 kilowatt hours, but only about 5.5 of those are usable. And the home battery is really cool. It uses a CT clamp, a current transformer clamp, a bit like this. It goes around your meter tails, just clips on, and then it kind of compensates for the house load. So it'll try and make your meter read zero all the time if it can, unless like the batteries are full, and then it'll start exporting your solar power. 5 years in, generated about 11 megawatt hours. The meter's measured about 33 megawatt hours, of which 6 have been exported and 27 imported. And the batteries lost about 10-11% of their health, which I think is not too bad. The temperature regulation is not very good. they get very cold and very hot, and they get used a lot. But it's very happy with the system. I'd definitely make a bigger one now, though, but things have come down in price a lot. So heating, cooling, and domestic hot water. So for a while, we just used the immersion heater on overnight in the hot water tank, because with the smart tariffs we were on, it was cheaper than gas. And you can also then just boost it if you need to, if you run out. And then after that, we got a small heat pump. Liked that, so we got a big one. This was in a time when planning rules weren't as relaxed as they are now. Thankfully, it's been changed. So we had to go through an awful planning process with the local council. It's just dreadful. I would recommend avoiding that at all costs. But on the positive, it took so long that the government increased the grant they give you, so it actually saved us a lot of money. So we paid the deposit for this heat pump in 2023, but it took over 2 years to actually get it fitted. If you are getting your plumbing upgraded from a gravity system, so you have a tank in the loft and it's just on, they call this a vented system. and you're upgrading to mains pressure and you have high mains pressure, just be very careful of leaks, because your pipes will be, you know, happily sitting there at like 0.3 bar for decades, and then suddenly you put multiple bar of pressure into it, and yeah, we had a few leaks. So definitely worth considering like a pressure reducer onto the old plumbing. The heat pump disinfects itself once a week, so once a week the water's a lot hotter in the morning. So yeah, you just don't need to be aware of that. So if you have thermostatic mixers on things, it's not a big deal. But if you have like separate taps, which, yeah, I hate separate taps, there's such a bad user interface. But if you don't have a mixer, like, yeah, you need to be a bit careful. So this is a small heat pump. It's an air-to-air one. It's really just an air conditioning unit. It has a infrared control, and it also has local Wi-Fi. It's quite an old one, so the Wi-Fi was on the local network. They don't do that now. It's cloud only, but there are third-party things you can get off the internet that you can replace this module with and integrate it with your home control systems. It's 2 kilowatts, but when you talk about the power of heat pumps, people are usually talking about the heat, not the electrical energy that goes in. So this thing only draws about 500 watts. And it's very quiet. I'm going to keep emphasizing how quiet these things are. They're big fans, and I'm a big fan of them. The bigger and slower the fan spins, the it's the small, really high-frequency ones which are annoying. This is the big heat pump. It's a lot bigger. This is an air-to-water one. It required us to have almost all of our radiators replaced in the house for new, bigger radiators, which wasn't a big deal for us because they were horrible radiators that we wanted to replace anyway. You need more surface area because you're running it at a lower flow temperature. Unfortunately, this one is cloud only, but it does have local manual controls. So, yeah, although it connects to the internet for things, like, it has a control panel on the thermostat. Like, you can actually go and change things without relying on a vendor that's inevitably going to shut it down. This one's about 11 kilowatts. That's thermal again, so it only pulls, like, when it's ticking along, maybe a kilowatt. It can ramp up to, you know, it has a beefy connection, so it can go up to like 5 kilowatts. It has like some backup heaters in there as well, which can pull up a lot of power, and it also controls the immersion heater. And again, it's very quiet. It's a huge fan. The neighbors have, unprompted, just said how quiet they think it is, because that's what people think they're going to be noisy. That's their main concern, and that was the main problem with our planning permission. They thought it was going to be noisy. You can also use it for cooling. This is a silly way of doing it, but it does work. If it's a hot day, you can do your hot water and sit in the cold air that it's blowing out. The other one is an air-to-air one. It's air conditioning. And the main thing about cooling is it pairs really well with solar power. If you have solar panels, like, I'll be running the air conditioning, staying cool in the heat wave, and still exporting kilowatts of power. Yeah, it's perfectly matched. Whereas in the winter for heating, obviously, it's not. Right, cooking as well. Plug-in induction hobs we started with just to test it out. And obviously, air fryers, they're plug-in. We take those camping now. This is our car, and I made a cable for a vehicle-to-load adapter. It comes with an adapter, but it's pretty naff, so I made a cable that's waterproof, and you can get more current out of it. And yeah, you can run things off this, like, this is a pizza oven running off, or you can run electric barbecues and things. But we also got a fitted induction hob after that, and it's great. It's a lot easier to clean. That's the main thing I like about it. It's much more efficient. You know, things don't get hot. There's no heat coming up the side. Yeah, the pans are less likely to burn you, and when you stop cooking, it's really cold at the end. But yeah, I say you can get like electrical barbecues as well. My family have some of these. I'm not super interested in that because I don't eat meat. But the oven works really well. I like that. And this is one of these smart plugs, which I'm going to get onto in a minute. The reason this is here is because this is an IKEA one. It's called Grillplatz, which is like a barbecue, but I don't know why they call it that. But anyway, onto the monitoring and the tech of all this. I use Home Assistant. This is a ZBT2. It's a Fred, a matter of a Fred adapter for Home Assistant. And yeah, all these sockets form a mesh network in your house, and you can monitor all the energy things you're using. Also have Open Energy Monitor with some CT clamps like this on the grid feeds, on the tails of the meter, so you can measure what's going into which consumer unit, into which circuit breaker board. And the whole sort of guiding principle, the design of this, is like, things should work as they normally do. You should turn the light on, it should just turn on. And things should get progressively smarter. You shouldn't have to rely on cloud integrations to control your lights. There's people we know where they've got like voice assistant integrations for their lights, and their internet goes down, they can't turn their lights on. And it's like, this is a silly thing to do, don't do that. Make it work on its own and then enhance it afterwards was the idea. Here's some graphs. This is from Open Energy Monitor. You can see sort of the yellow one is the main board. These two things are car charging. So your car charging is going to be the main pull. This is, it goes up to 7 kilowatts when it's charging it on single phase. And this is sort of smart charging as well. So it's being automatically controlled and turning on and off when the best times are for it to charge. The blue line is a heat pump. It's just doing hot water at the moment. This one is a normal cycle. This one here is a bit bigger because this is the weekly disinfection cycle where it runs the immersion heater as well to get it to a higher temperature to prevent things like Legionella and stuff like that. This is one from winter. This previous one is more recent one. So this is what the heat pump looks more like in the winter. The heat pump's running a lot more. The red line is temperature. So you can see as the heat pump's running, the temperature goes up. The car charging is the yellow one there as well. But it also includes the rest of the house, which is kind of just dwarfed by the car charging. You can pull all this into Home Assistant and integrate it with other data feeds. So, the EVSE data, although this runs through our main consumer unit, we have an integration with a charge point that pulls all the data in, so you can then separate that out and work out what the remainder is. Got a few smart sockets on things, so you can see how much is the dishwasher using and things like that. And the heat pump is on its separate meter tail, so we can measure that separately. And then, I've got some of these plugs are not just monitoring, they're for control as well, so I have them for these air filters, but they don't use very much power, these. You can also do a lovely Sankey diagram after this, so you can be like, here's my home, and the heat pump's using this much, and then this is the main board, and the car charging's here, and then you can even split it out to be like, dishwasher and washing machine and bread maker and my coffee machine, and just see how many things are being used and when it's if you're into sort of breaking it down like that. It's a bit addictive, though, so I'm probably going to have to get a lot more CT clamps, a lot more sockets, and have everything measured. I need to get the fridge and freezer on there, but I don't really want them to accidentally be turned off. Electric vehicles, you can integrate these as well, which is really nice. You can see how charged the batteries are. Here I've got it integrated into both the vehicles and the charge point, and then this is our smart charging. When you plug it in, the charge point detects that, and then it refreshes the cars and be like, okay, which one's it plugged into? And how much do you want it to get up to? How much do we need to add to get it to where you want it to be? Or at least it used to work like that until Nissan recently shut down their cloud service, and I can't do that with the Leaf anymore. But it still works with the other one. The best thing about EVs, I think, is you can remotely control the heating from them. So in the morning when it's icy and your neighbors are out scraping their cars, you just defrost, and then you get out there and it's all melted. Or when it's hot outside and you're in the supermarket in the queue and you're like, I'll just cool the car down before I go and get in. It's brilliant. One thing to note about EVs is the problem with them is normally the battery, but not the battery you might think about. It's normally the 12-volt lead-acid battery that you have in all vehicles, and it's really unreliable. And you think, maybe EVs don't use this, but they need it to run the computer and things. And that is the biggest problem I've ever had. So I would say always carry a jump starter. This is a USB battery pack, but it also functions as a jump starter. Just have one of these on you, because you might need to start your car sometime with it. They have a habit of draining the 12 volt, particularly when there's something being pushed from a vendor, like a privacy policy update or a new terms of service or firmware update, and then suddenly your car doesn't start. You can also control your climate, so you can integrate it with all the heat pumps and see what's going on with the heat pumps. And what temperature it's set to, how much energy it's used, and sort of pre-cool and pre-heat. Because if you want to use these to heat more efficiently, you can run them in cheap electricity periods and kind of pre-heat things overnight so it's warm in the morning for you. And then you can also measure things like temperature and the air quality. I built a bunch of air quality sensors that I'll just talk about in a bit. There's various ways of monitoring that. So this is air quality monitoring. This is a thing called Sensor Community. Used to be called Luftdaten. I'm sure people are familiar with it here. Uses these little sensors that you can build. You put it together with a little ESB board and another little temperature sensor, and then it reports things to the cloud. And you can house it in a bit of drain pipe, although it only fits in EU drain pipe, a metric drain pipe, so you have to go on a bit of a trip to collect this. If you go to the UK ones, they're imperial, so it didn't fit. And this is a graph of one of the things it reports. And you see it's ticking along, and then there's some various spikes. And we'll talk about what those are later. You can also pull this into Home Assistant. That's probably not as easy to see. But yeah, you can basically just pull this. This has a little sort of JSON web API in your local network that you can just pull in. There's lots of other ways to get hold of it. We'll stay here for a bit and maybe go back to this one. So yeah, this is another way of monitoring. This is a little IKEA thing I like. Little particulate matter sensor and CO2 sensor. Also runs off your badge, as I'm doing at the moment. But it's just USB-C. It's another one, a little portable one. It's called a Flow that you can just carry around with you. What else? This is it's an old IKEA one that's not as integrated, but this makes a really whiny noise with a fan. It just has little traffic lights. You can tap into it, but I'd say the new matter over Fred ones are much better. And what's going on here is the neighbors lighting their fires in the winter and burning wood nearby, and it spikes, and this is outside our front door to tell us how polluted it is and if we want to go outside. So, savings. It's really hard to say because things vary year on year, temperatures, and it will vary for other people. So I can't really say how much you're going to save if you do this. But for us, it's significantly cheaper. It's about £50 a month cheaper in the winter. And we don't have any gas, so we don't have to pay the standing charge on that, which is a good saving, particularly in the summer. Yeah, it's hard to compare. I'd say if you're on a standard like electricity tariff where you pay a flat rate all the time, it's going to be a similar running cost to gas, because heat pumps will use a third of the electricity, but electricity is like three times more expensive than gas, so it kind of balances out there. But if you're on a smart tariff and you have like cheap unit rates, and if you've got a home battery that can store that, then it works really well. One thing you do need to check is that you're not paying too much, because the energy company might still charge you the same fee, and they're still thinking you've got gas, or they're not including your export. So just make sure you keep an eye on that, and don't just leave it as it is. So for travel, it's definitely a lot cheaper. Charging at home is the real key here. If you're public charging, if you were just rapid charging your electric vehicle, it would be very similar costs to petrol or diesel. But home charging is an order of magnitude cheaper. It's unbelievably cheap, in fact, at least until it gets taxed at some point in the future based on your mileage. And electric vehicles are a lot more efficient. Like when you have like liquid fuel in a vehicle, 80% of it is wasted. Like only like 20% of the fuel you're paying for is actually used to move you around. The rest is like lost as heat. So it's all about system efficiency as well, because the whole supply chain is inefficient. So what would I do next time? Definitely more. More is the lesson here. The marginal cost of an extra solar panel is like £100, but the fixed costs are really high. So getting the people in, getting the scaffolding, getting everything and someone to put it up there. So if you're doing this, just go as big as you can. Like get as many panels on your roof as you can, get as big a battery as you can afford, because adding it later is not always cheap. It's a lot more efficient to do it up front. So our battery was fine for a while, but now we've got the heat pump, it gets eaten for breakfast. So I definitely put in a much bigger battery if you're planning to get a heat pump. It'd also be nice if it's a bigger battery and has a higher power output to have like a full backup capability. Ours is too small to do that, but you could have a big switch, so if your power goes off, the battery can just run your house. That'd be nice. And also the way ours was installed, one of the issues with our car charger is it goes into the main board along with everything else, which makes it hard to separate and monitor that. You can't put a clamp around that cable. I think these days they're typically installed as a separate consumer unit, so it's not a problem, but it's something to think about. I'd also make sure that everything's a bit smarter. Like our inverter is a little bit dumb. You can set timers and stuff on it. You can integrate into it if you reverse engineer it, but there are some which just work out of the box. So I'm going to cover things we didn't do. Things we could have done but didn't. It essentially boils down to burning stuff. So there's a thing called renewable diesel, but this is normally a thing called HVO, stands for hydro-treated vegetable oil. And you may think, oh, this is just, they're going to the fast food places and getting the used cooking oil and using that. But actually, no, it turns out there's a lot of fraud in this industry, and it turns out a lot of it is virgin palm oil from non-sustainable plantations that have deforested things. So it's actually worse than burning oil. Other things we didn't do. We deliberately decided not to get a wood burner. So, yeah, ask me like 10 years ago, I would have thought like, oh, these are super like desirable. Like, this is cozy, this is eco, this is great. It's all natural. But then I kind of started looking into it and read about it and looked at the evidence and reports. And yeah, it turns out they're really bad for your health. You know, smoke is smoke, and it's very similar to tobacco smoke. And it's really not good for you. And it's also really bad for the environment. And the way to think about this is, you know, it depends what you're burning. So, and what is the time horizon for that to be renewable? Because yeah, they're technically carbon neutral, but what's the time horizon on that? And it turns out it's about 100 years. And we don't really have 100 years. So yeah, if you're burning things like agricultural waste, like straw, yeah, that's gonna take a couple of seasons. But a log is a big thing. Like, trees take decades to grow, and we don't have decades. So that doesn't really work. And I think a way to think about this is to prioritize like the high impact items. So, you know, if you're, you know, sweating the details and worrying about things that are sort of on the fence about health, you know, like ultra processed foods and plastics and nonstick coatings and things, but ignoring other, you know, obvious health impacts that have a lot of evidence behind them, then yeah, I'd tackle the big things first. And a better way of dealing with sort of things you can burn is to turn them into charcoal and then sequester that. So you can make biochar, and it's used as a soil improver, and it makes the soil better, and then it locks that carbon away in the soil. I'd say if you already have one, don't like rip out like a wood fire or anything, but just save it for emergency use only. You can convert this to like a bioethanol burner, where it burns essentially vodka. You could put some plants in it, make it a nice terrarium. I'm sure people here will come up with lots of things with like fairy lights and LEDs and things, make it look awesome. So, the future. The future is not evenly distributed. I've been to Norway. That looks a lot like the future. There's a lot of, everything's electric there. Even like the, you know, diggers, like the construction machinery is all battery electric. I think very soon we're going to get a decision on plug-in solar in this country, which is very popular in Germany at the moment and has been for some time. And I think DESNZ are making a decision this month. Consultation closed at the end of last month. So hopefully we'll have some products available to buy soon. But you can just plug into a normal wall socket, which is great if you're a renter. And yeah, it detects the grid and will export, or compensate for your base load anyway, without like having a live plug when it's unplugged. And I think following that, you're gonna get like plug-in batteries, so things you don't need an installer to do, which will be great. Another thing that seems to have been coming for ages is vehicle to grid or vehicle to home, where just like I was powering my pizza oven from my car there, you can export it into your house and run your house from your cars. I was saying, we have a tiny home battery. We have an order of magnitude more storage sitting on the drive that we can't use, which we could use to run the heat pump or something. That'd be brilliant. And finally, heat pump ventilation. Yeah, you're doing, which is a fancy way of saying sort of heating and cooling, sort of air-to-air system with ducts and a heat exchanger. So you're bringing fresh air in and exchanging the energy and heat with the outgoing air, so it's all nice and fresh. And then you can condition that and change the temperature of the heat pump and pair that with underfloor heating. It's really good. So to summarize, we went all electric with electric vehicles and solar panels and batteries and heat pumps and induction hobs. We've got rid of our gas and saved loads of money and saving the planet at the same time. It's loads of fun, so you should do it. Here's some extra resources. Our World in Data is brilliant. Ember Energy is a think tank. They do loads of good reports on this. Flight Free have loads of inspiration if you want to drive somewhere and not get a flight in Europe. And there's even a Lonely Planet book. So yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to end on a haiku. The future is electric, and it is already here. So stop burning stuff. Thanks.